Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Good evening, Christopher.
And our tactics guy and Maurizio Pochettino apologist, Nathan A. Clarke. Hello, Nathan.
Back once again with the ill behaviour.
Firstly, shout out to my good friend, Paul King, who has become a father for the first time. Very best of luck to Paul, bringing a Spurs-supporting child into this world. But let's talk about Sheffield straight away, because I want to come to Nathan and say, please find a positive on this one, I dare you.
Well... I liked the first half. I was happy with the first half. That has proven to be a highly controversial take. And even with Pochettino said that the first half was poor. So I guess I must be wrong. But I after the first 10 minutes or so, I thought we were exerting more and more control over the game. I was fairly happy with the way that we were pressing. I thought we were beginning to create some chances. So I do think that there was some promise in the first half, even if you don't feel it delivered. We also were terrible at moving the ball out the back, and that's a huge issue. But once we got the ball forward, we were good. That's the positive.
Interesting. Okay, there's a lot to dissect there, but I'll start off by going to Bardi, because Bardi, you took your wife to the game, and you also sat in a different place to normal, so you got a different perspective. What were your general thoughts?
Yeah, I got to say thank you to Ross. He went up in the gods and sat in my seat, and he allowed me to sit in the West Stand in row 9. And it was a totally different experience watching the football that low. It seemed a lot more chaotic than you usually think. It was tight, and it was strange being that close to Dyer and Davies, especially in the first half, and just the sheer panic on them. Because Sheffield United, they have this weird tactic on their free kicks. I don't know if you noticed it. They go deep, and then they immediately, the man they hit never holds the ball. He knocks it back, and they to try and drag the centre back and the full back out of position. And they did that every time. And it was quite amazing to watch it keep working every single time on Davies and Dyer. But yeah, I took my wife to the game, and it was interesting. You know, sometimes they say the truth comes out of the mouth of babes, out of the mouth of children. And a lot of what she said made a lot of sense. I know she was just using her eyes and saying what she saw, but without the agendas, without understanding why the contractual issues, she was like, why is Eriksen not playing? He's the only one who knows how to pass the ball. Why does Dyer look so clumsy? Why is Kane not running? And these are all questions, especially the Kane one, that I don't know, we don't seem to talk about enough. And it's something that we should really. But like Nathan, I think there were still some positives in the game. And had Pochettino not made that awful tactical error, I think we probably would have won that game 2-3 by hitting him on the counter.
We need to come back to that tactical error, because there's a lot to say there. But firstly, just going back to the comment you made about their free kicks, I didn't pick up on this at all. Could you explain a bit more about what you mean there?
So they would get a free kick deep, either if a goal kick or an offside or a foul, and they seem to hit it long diagonal into one of their front men. And that front man, all he wanted to do was knock it back first time to the winger or to midfielder. So like the team would be dragged over for the high ball, and they were quickly trying to get it out of the touchline as quickly as possible. And it was something that I could see them doing in the second half, especially because I had a look straight down straight down our right-hand side. And in the first half as well, they kept doing it to Dier. And I think even the free kick where Dier got booked, I think that was maybe from a similar manoeuvre. So in, out, like the ball would go long, they would knock it back quickly and then move the ball across into the space.
Really interesting. Yeah, I have noticed in previous matches that they've had free kick routines, but I must admit that I didn't notice this at all in this game. But I do admire, I always admire a free kick routine. I love that.
They were superb. When Newcastle came and got the point, that was a lot of luck. But I think there was more than luck into the Sheffield United team. And the fact that kind of Norwich had this kind of great run at the start, but then they've fallen away. The fact that Sheffield United, I know they've only got one game a week and they can rest and focus on these matches. The way they executed their plan, cutting out the passing channels and really working us and hitting us where we're weakest. I got a lot of respect to that team.
So I think I'm right in saying that they have the best defensive record in the Premier League and are also unbeaten away, which is just absolutely remarkable for a newly promoted team, particularly one that has plenty of players who have no Premier League experience and plenty with very limited Premier League experience. They look incredibly well coached, and that was in stark contrast to our lot, who look very poorly coached at the moment and who didn't seem to have, certainly defensively, didn't seem to have a plan for Sheffield United. And I spoke last week about the fact that when we're good, we would just steamroller a team like this and we win 2-1 despite the fact that they're a well-organised team. Well, actually, we didn't have an answer for their tactics, I felt, and I thought we were quite lucky actually to get a point out of the game. Bardi referenced a tactical error from Pochettino. I suspect I know what he's talking about, Nathan, but did you have a view on the tactical change?
Is this the half-time change or the later one?
I think Bardi's referring to the switch to the 5-4-1. Is that right,
yeah,
Bardi?
I mean, it was strange to not see Ndombele come out for the second half, but I heard the rumour in the crowd was it was a groin injury, but it was the switch where I thought we were starting to see some joy on the counter-attack, and especially combinations between Dele and Son. That change of taking off Dele, I think, hurt us and almost threw the initiative towards him.
Nathan, what do you think the rationale was behind that?
I'm not sure. It may just be about getting the sort of the 3v2 at the back, getting the man advantage there. I don't know. I don't really have any particularly strong thoughts on that particular move. I think that our best period of time in the second half came in the final 10 minutes or so, which was in that shape, but after moving Lo Celso central with Lucas coming on. So I guess you could say it was a step towards that. I don't know. I'm a bit lost on that one, I'm afraid.
I just seem to think we lost a lot of momentum. And we did, and Nathan's right, we did look good in the last 10 minutes. I thought Lucas came on and looked bright. And one of the advantages of being where I sat is on the full-time whistle, Lucas, he properly stormed off. He wasn't in a good mood. And he didn't look a happy bunny.
I felt a bit bad because I was quite critical of Lucas on the last podcast, and he did have a genuinely positive impact on this one. And, you know, he has done that off the bench a few times. He's always looked to me better off the bench than starting games. And if we can get something out of him, get a tune out of him in that respect, it'd be helpful. But I felt as though he didn't get enough time to have that impact. And we had a question from Doc Hammertime, who said, Harry can't move anymore, true or false? I thought in this game in particular, Kane looked really hampered. I'm willing to put it down to the fact that he's had a virus and then was asked to play 180 minutes. I thought he should have come off against Red Star. I thought that of Ndombele as well. Bardi, you've got other views.
Yeah, what, like Kane is finished as a top-class footballer? No, I'm not going to go there, but he just looked sluggish. He looked slow. There was opportunities where he could have had a shot, and he didn't. And opportunities where he could have spread the ball wide, like we've seen him do many times. He did just seem half a second off the pace, which is worrying, because we know how long it takes him to get up to speed. And now he's going to go off with the international team and probably play 2 matches.
Get injured.
That really annoys me. Mm. And the same of Tonki and Ndombele, who's going off to play international football despite coming off half-time in this match. Taylor Talks Tech, who says, seeing the lack of press for the Sheffield United goal, what would Poch's rationale be for this total move away from a pressing team? Personnel, tactical, or just can't be asked anymore? And I would urge you to read the thread on Twitter from Chris Summersell. I tweeted about Sheffield United's goal, because Sheffield United were kind of blowing their own trumpet a bit about their 23-pass move. And I kind of commented that it was more that Spurs were passive than Sheffield United being particularly good. And Chris did a much deeper analysis than that of the move. And it was really good and well worth a read. And Nathan, what did you make of the goal? Is that Sheffield being good or is that us being bad?
Yeah, half of each. Again, I do think that we pressed fairly well in the first half. Not brilliantly, obviously, and they did have their chances, and they did also have the first 10 minutes or so. I don't pretend that it was perfect, but I thought we were playing our game in the first half, and then when Ndombele came on and Harry Winks moved into the deepest role with Sissoko moving slightly further forward, our pressing was very poor for most of the rest of the game. I'm going to be quite harsh on Harry Winks and essentially say that I don't think that we can play the pressing game that we want to with him, maybe in the side at all, but especially in that deepest role. I'm a fan of Winks as a player. I think he has some very good skills, but I just think that he's causing our team, not his fault, but his limitations are causing us as a team some significant problems at the moment. Come on, Chris, let's have it.
It's really hard to disagree. It's really hard to disagree at the moment. I'm not prepared to write off Harry Winks until I've seen him play 10 games without Moussa Sissoko alongside him. I mean, someone said on my Twitter feed that our downward turn has coincided with Moussa Sissoko becoming a fixture in our team. And I think that is like a little over the top, in that Sissoko has had some really good games and he's a very functional player and he tries really hard and that rubs off on others. But it's very hard to sort of disagree. I mean, it is a fact, basically.
Yeah, I mean, if you need Moussa Sissoko to play in your side, you have a fundamental issue with your side. That's not Sissoko's fault. And yeah, he does obviously have his strengths, which we have been very, maybe not on the particular podcast, but as a fan base, we've been very happy with. But he's obviously a flawed player. And if you're an elite, or at least attempting to be an elite side, if you are playing Moussa Sissoko, there must be something wrong going on.
And the thing about that, and I agree with what you just said, the thing about it is that he's definitely a Pochettino favourite. He's definitely a favourite because he plays nearly every game and he's just been rewarded with a new contract. Can you explain?
Well, yeah, name? Because he, unlike Harry Winks, has the necessary athletic ability to cover the ground, which for Pochettino is issue number one on the midfielder list. Can they cover the ground? Are they fast enough? Are they strong enough? Yes, Moussa Sissoko is definitely that. And therefore, he's getting the game time. If we can find players who are similarly athletic but also have a more rounded skill base, we'll be in a much better place. At the moment, and Ndombele is kind of there, although lacking match fitness, and that's about it for our midfield.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Sissoko gets game times because he's the only player who can play two games in a week without it showing on him. And Winks and Ndombele, they can't do it.
It's a fair point, and I think that's probably why he got the contract, because despite the fact that he's 30, he's very, very physically capable. He's a bit of a freak of nature, really, isn't he? You don't get many 30-year-olds who have that level of intensity twice a week, that kind of burst of pace from a standing start. He's quite the specimen physically, but he's very restrictive generally of our kind of tactical possession style. I mean, it's hard to disagree with anything you guys have said, even though I do really want to believe that Harry Winks can come good.
I think on the pressing matter, I think a lot of it's to do with our defence, though. I don't think our defence is capable to push up alongside the midfield. And that Sheffield United goal, there just seem to be huge gaps between the defence and midfield. Basically, you need the whole team to push up 10 yards and then have faith in your defence that they can play a high line, have faith in your goalkeeper that they can play a high line. And Gazzaniga can't, our defence can't. And it just means we end up playing this kind of mix of allowing them to have the ball and then hoping to nick it in like when they're 10, 15 yards in our half. And had Lo Celso managed to make that tackle, we probably, it looked like there was a proper counter-attack going to happen. So you could see we kind of invite teams in hoping to nick it because we just don't have the players to play a high press.
I think you're right that there was definitely a ploy to get Sheffield United to play the ball inside and then to pounce on them. But if that was the case, then...
what are we doing here?
it was really poorly done. Lo Celso was the only one trying to press the ball. No one backed him up. And then Son gambled on him winning it, so he committed himself, which meant that other players had to commit. Dyer came up defence. Davies had to reposition. Then they ended up with Bulldog free on the right and his cross just went in. It was really clumsy team defending for that goal. Let's talk a bit about Dyer. I was intrigued. I didn't think he would start this game. I was really interested that he did. What was fascinating to me was the fact that he played on the left side of a back four initially, and he wanted to play everything with his left foot. Now, I've never noticed that Dyer is both-footed. So, and I don't think he is necessarily. I think he's a right-footed player. He gave so much of the ball away, but he kept doing it. And I wanted, do you think it was instruction, Bardi, that he was asked to play things with his left?
I don't know. I don't think he is two-footed. I don't know when he worked. Maybe he got hit on the head and he thinks he's now two-footed. But I could see you could see what he was trying to do. They were the right type of passes. They were into the right areas, but the execution was all wrong. Sanchez has played on the left before when we've had Alderweireld, and I think that probably would have been a safer option because we were talking about Dyer's passing and how it might be a good thing for us, for him bringing the ball out. But yeah, not like that. Not with Davies on his left, because he didn't even have an out ball to Davies. It was, yeah, it was comical, and he should have changed it up. But one thing Dyer does do is he does love a moan. He was constantly going after all his other teammates, even though it wasn't their fault and it was just his bad passing.
He kind of got off to a really bad start because he was booked after about a minute, and it never really got much better for him. Nathan, what do you think the rationale was for him being picked in the first place?
Picked in the first place, to me, there was this vague feeling of, oh, well, you like that Wednesday team, here's that Wednesday team then. And then if it doesn't work... Right, then you're making, you as the fan base, you're getting what you asked for, and it's still not working out. So it's obviously not simply a selection of the 11 thing. Is that Pochettino's style? Is that his mood? I don't know, maybe, but it did have that kind of feeling. With him being played on the left, though, that just makes sense to me. He played left midweek next to Sanchez. He is the more technical player of the two of them. And I think the reason he was playing his left foot so much is because he was being played onto his left foot by Sheffield's pressing, Sheffield United's pressing. You know, not that he wants to consider himself a left player, but that's the way the play opened up. I also think out of that sort of deepest three of Sanchez, Sissoko and himself, he was the only one really attempting to progress the ball. So he had to take the risks, and when he took the risks, he failed with them because he was on his weaker foot, because he's playing on his less preferred side, because he's playing centre-back for the first time in several months. I don't really blame him. I don't think that he made poor decisions. I think that's just the circumstance that he was playing in.
I definitely agree that he was often left with no other option other than to try and go long with his left foot. Sissoko, his skill set is not to show for the ball deep. He just doesn't do that. He's not that kind of player. He's not like Winks, who just wants the ball every opportunity, even if it's just to make a sideways pass. He's not a busy midfielder. And Dyer probably needed a bit of help out there to give him an option. Maybe he perhaps could have gone back to Gazzaniga a bit more and been a bit more conservative rather than just trying to chip balls forward constantly. It didn't work out anyway. That's the main thing. But sorry, Nathan, in regards to what you just said about the Wednesday selection and then the Saturday selection, we had a question from Darren Pammenter, who said, how can the team be the same, excluding the fullbacks? How can they play so well Wednesday and then not be able to pass it 5 yards to each other on Saturday? What do you think the key issues were there?
Well, primarily the level of opposition. Obviously, the Serbian league is not in a great position at the moment, if that is the most they have to offer. Sheffield United are a decent team, and I we have to acknowledge that. But more importantly, the way Blades defended, which is they contested possession most of the way up the pitch, as opposed to Red Star, who just dropped off deep and wanted to defend in a low block. It was, at the moment, the style of play that we're most vulnerable to, which is why I was worried about Everton, is teams who play a medium or high defence and play with a intensity in the middle of the park. And that's just something that we really, really struggle against at the moment. Those are the two major facets.
Yeah, I think they're right about the fullbacks as well. I think at Red Star, Danny Rose, for all his faults, he's a bit better at left back than Davies, and Foyth is much better with his passing than Aurier. So I think changing those fullbacks had a massive impact on us.
Foyth's cameo was decent again.
Yeah, he's fine.
I couldn't understand not bringing Sessegnon on though, personally.
Charlie Eccleshare on The Athletic wrote that he thinks that Pochettino doesn't trust Foyth as centre-back, which is why he keeps playing him wide. So that's just an opinion there. And the fact that why he put him on as a back three, then he changed him into right full-back, is just he doesn't believe in him as a centre-back at the moment.
I really struggle to accept that explanation myself. I mean, it's possible, and if he's got sort of some inside knowledge that we don't, we have to accept that. But like, he's played for the centre back plenty. It's not like we're lacking for centre back options. We've seen four of them in pretty heavy rotation. For me, the reason Foyth is playing at right back and not centre back is because we're even more catastrophic at right back than we are at centre back at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Today suggests that Pochettino is looking to sign defensive players, which kind of makes sense. It's what you'd expect when you're having a tough time defensively, and particularly when the two Belgians are likely to go. The frustration for me, and I wrote about this at the weekend, is that Pochettino's overseen this squad building over the past four windows, and he's allowed it to get into this state. And he's had Sanchez and Foyth there, but he's had Walker Peters there, and he's had Sessegnon now there, but he's not really brought the players through. Sanchez had a season, that's fair enough. I feel like he's been fairly well developed. Foyth hasn't. And I feel like he should be further along now, given the potential he's shown. And that's a slight frustration to me. So speaking of the academy, speaking of Walker Peters, we had a question from Sean Gormley, who said, Poch goes all Cabal Cabal 2, electric boogaloo, love that, in January, and shit cans uncommitted senior players and promotes youth players with the rest of the Premier League season a write-off. Who gets the chop and who is promoted to fill out the first team? So I love the question, but I have absolutely no faith that that will happen. And the reason I have no faith that that will happen is that Pochettino's kind of stopped developing academy players full stop. And I've written about this a couple of times recently. I feel frustrated because when Pochettino first came in, he was so brave in his selection of young players, and he brought in Mason and Bentaleb. He was using Harry Kane. He was developing players with sign like Dele. And it felt to me to be a real trust in youngsters who got it, who got the club, who'd been there for a long time. And he put faith in them ahead of these kind of overpaid prima donnas who didn't play for the shirt. And it was lovely. And we're now at a point where we've got a whole bunch more overpaid prima donnas who don't want to play for the shirt, but we've got no youngsters to bring through because of the change in youth policy. And that is that Pochettino, since he's come in, has always wanted young players who he likes to be training with the first team, to be in amongst it, to have a look at them in training. The problem with that is they're not out on loan, they're not developing, they're not playing under-23 football, under-18 football, they're not playing any football. So you get a bunch of players who are your most promising essentially stagnating. And that leads to Marcus Edwards, Josh Onnemar, Kyle Walker-Peters, three players who were England regulars at all the youth levels and just have not progressed at any kind of rate. They've basically done nothing. They've come out of the under-18s, all guns blazing, and then tailed off. And that's not good. We've got to change something. I know I bang on about this a lot, and it's a frustration to me, but Bardi, are you anywhere near agreeing with this, or am I just being over the top about the whole thing?
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I just think maybe the quality hasn't been there. When he arrived at the club, he had Townsend, Bentaleb, all those guys that you're talking about. But since then, perhaps our youth scouting hasn't been that great. I mean, realistically, I know he hasn't given the game time to Skip and Kyle Walker-Peters, but and maybe Edwards, but is there anyone else that we've missed? I don't know. I just think there's been a whole mismanagement of youth players. We got Jack Clark, for example, that someone we spent quite a bit of money on, and I don't even know. I don't even think he's playing football at the moment. So I think our whole academy is in a mess, and it just doesn't seem to be anything good coming out of it or any kind of promise coming through it.
So the Townsend was an interesting one to mention. The thing about Townsend was he had all of these loan moves at multiple different clubs that led to him being a Premier League player. And ultimately, he wasn't good enough for Spurs, but we made a really good profit on him. We got a couple of good years out of him where he played some good matches and he was a useful squad player. I mean, he'd probably be a useful squad player still if we still had him, to be honest. And I don't think the talent pool has dried up. I just think the way we've been developing young players has changed to the detriment mm-hmm. of those players. I think Jack Rowles, who's gone out on loan this season, finally, after 2 years of having loan offers, has just got League Two Player of the Month, which is fantastic. Hopefully he can kind of lead the charge in terms of showing Pochettino and John McDermott that that was the right thing to do, and we should be loaning more of our youngsters and giving them opportunities. I worry with Parrott that he's now going to be the next one to fall into this Pochettino middle ground where he's not playing any football at any level. I mean, to be fair, he's played a few games at under 23 level this year, and he's played in the most of the UEFA Youth League matches, although not the Red Star one, which is again a frustration to me. But it does concern me. Not that I necessarily think that the academy should have all of the answers to our problems. I don't. I just think it might have a couple of answers. And I think for the players that aren't going to answer our problems, we can make good profit. And that allows you to buy a better calibre of a first team player because you've got more money, essentially. Nathan, what do you make of it all?
I think when you look at those three players, Edwards, Onoma and Walker Peters, individually, you can explain away one of them, even two of them. But I think if you have all three clearly talented, promising, exciting young players who, as you said, were getting multiple different levels of England international game time, shows that they're, you know, between the three of them, we should at least have got something out of one of them. And I just as on a statistical basis, to have so little to show from three objectively promising young players does suggest that there is something wrong going on.
And I tell you, people will be listening to this and they will say, well, look at Onoma now. He's at Fulham and he's not even getting in the Fulham team. And let me stop you in your tracks if you're thinking that and say, the Josh Onoma now is not the Josh Onoma that he should be. Like, this is Josh Onoma after about 4 years of stagnation. He was brilliant for the under-18s and then for the under-21s, as it was when he came through. He was a superb midfielder. And the fact that he hasn't come through and become a superb Premier League midfielder
is a consequence of
who Man City tried to sign when they had, you know, some other brilliant young players, is a consequence of our lack of development, and a consequence, in my opinion, of Pochettino's decision to make him part of the first team squad and not play any other football or very limited football. It's a shame. I really want him to change his methods. I really want us to bring in someone to oversee the young players and their development from under-18s to first team. I think it's a really, really important role. I also want us to have a director of football. Perhaps those two things could be the same role. I don't know. But structurally, there is a problem. I'll get off my hobby horse now because I could talk about this a lot. Question from Simon Hemsworth, who says, is this an ideal season to go all in for the FA Cup? Buddy, what do you think? I kind of liked that when I read that.
Every season, in my opinion, has been a good idea to go all in for the FA Cup. I think half of Pochettino's problems that he's facing now in a kind of downturn of form is the fact that he has kind of pied off a lot of cup games over his years. With now top four becoming not important, I think our only way of success is either winning the Champions League, which is a big ask, or winning an FA Cup. So 100%, yeah. Rest players for the league.
Rest players for the league. What do you mean rest players in the league and play the strongest in the FA Cup?
Yeah, play the kids in the league and go all out for the FA Cup.
Do a Wigan.
Nathan, I mean, it would be great for Amazon, you know? They would love it.
Nathan, how about you? Is it worth prioritising the FA Cup this year?
Possibly. I would also just say, like, I wouldn't be shocked if we, despite the chaos that's happening in the league, had another decent run in the Champions League. Because the way that we're having to play sort of lends itself to those that game style, to the context of the Champions League. And we, again, it looks like we're going to do enough to squeeze out the group, and then we may be in a better shape at the end of the season. So don't write off the Champions League just yet, is what I'm saying.
Do you not think, though, that a lot of our success in the Champions League last year, I can't believe I'm about to say this, came down to Fernando Llorente?
Fucking hell.
Like, the ability for us to go direct... Yep. Genuinely won us a lot of games. I thought, like, I can't believe I'm saying it.
I think,
but it kind of, like, this traditional old school English style kind of got us through. It meant we didn't have to play through midfield, which is our problem.
Yeah, so that's essentially what I'm saying, is that playing more direct, which we did last year and a bit this year out of necessity as well, lends itself to the Champions League. I don't think we have to have Llorente in order to make playing direct work for us.
Yeah, but I think we do need a Llorente player, because I don't think Kane's willing just to stand on the edge of the box and have the ball pinged.
Can't jump anymore.
But I think, yeah, he can't jump. He can't get to the edge of the box.
And it's a long way.
I think Windy's right that it was Llorente, but it wasn't Llorente the man. It was just the ability to cause chaos. De Ligt has never seen a man like
Ruined
Llorente
him.
Before, and that's what helped. And then Manchester City, as we saw at the weekend, that, you know, defensively it's never been their strong point. But yeah, I think we are probably better set up now for kind of chaos Champions League than we are 38 game season.
We had a really fun question from Daniel Platt, who said, if you could clone 5 body parts from any member of the squad in order to Frankenstein together a new player for our squad to solve our issues, whose parts would you pick? You may only take 1 body part from one player, left leg, right leg, forehead for headers, brain and lungs.
Should we take a body part each?
Yeah, why not? So do you want the left leg, Bardi? In fact, which position are we going to build here?
I think you'll probably agree with me, but I think probably a defensive midfielder.
Okay.
Ideal.
For our defensive midfielder, whose left leg are you having, Bardi?
I don't know now. Probably Lo Celso's. Give me Lo Celso's.
Good shout. Nathan, who's right leg?
God, this is such a ridiculous question. Ndombele's right leg.
Okay, nice.
Controversial.
Forehead, God.
Wanyama's 50p forehead.
Eric Dyer's massive bonce.
He's good, he can head the ball, he's alright, yeah. I agree with that.
So Bardi, who's defensive midfield brain? This is the tricky one, isn't it?
No, I think that's simple. I think it's Wanyama's brain because he is a great midfielder who just doesn't have the body anymore.
Okay, good shout. And lungs, I mean, the obvious one is Christian Eriksen.
Sissoko.
Or Musa.
Yeah. Oh, Sissoko, yeah, good shout.
So we basically just built Ndidi.
Oh, I mean, he's basically my dream signing at the moment. I absolutely love watching Ndidi play at the moment. I love watching Leicester in general, but Ndidi is a sexy, sexy footballer. He's got a bit of everything to his game. He's so good, ridiculously good. Mark Lynch says, actually, shout out to Mark Lynch, who is like one of our biggest supporters. He's always there with the questions. He says, not sure when the next pod is, but to give you some thinking time, hypothetically, you have control over who goes from the squad and there's no difference in contract expiring. Which 5 or so are going based on performance and their fit? So, Bardi, which 5 players would you like to cull from our squad right now?
Aurier, Davies, Vertonghen, Eriksen. How many more have I got left?
That's 4.
4 and... oh my gosh, I don't know. I'm going to get rid of Alderweireld as well. Get rid of them all. Yeah.
How about you?
Can I just say Serge Aurier 5 times?
Piece at a time.
You can, yeah. Aurier is high on my list. Danny Rose is also high on my list. Kyle Walker-Peters, because he's not going to play anywhere. There's no point in him.
A mercy killing.
A mercy killing for Kyle. Free Kyle Walker-Peters. The other two are tricky. I still feel sad about Vertonghen and Alderweireld leaving, even though it's inevitable. I mean, it has to be. So he says it's not about contract expiry.
That changes the entire situation. Like, if Tomi could sign a new contract tomorrow, no one's getting rid of him, are they?
No, exactly. So you'd probably look at, Jesus, Sissoko, maybe, and probably Lucas. Hmm. Yeah. Is that harsh?
A little bit.
It feels harsh. And we'll end with this one. Brian Mulholland says, please advise which Spurs-related book I should ask Santa for. Clive Allen or the Grease one looks decent. Any football tactical books Nathan would recommend? Bardi, you're a big reader. Any books you'd recommend?
Yeah, I really like the book In Search of Alan Gilzean. This is like one of our legendary footballers who kind of fell off the map from the moment he retired. And this was back in a day when, you know, players didn't make a lot of money and clubs basically, when the player's contract was up, kind of like, see you later. Here's a little bit of a severance package. They weren't kind of financially reimbursed like they are now. And this author, he just goes out to try and find Alan Gilzean. And eventually it ends up with Gilzean being kind of put back into the fold at Tottenham. And up until his death, he was actually doing things around the club, you know, like Legends evenings and Legends tours and that kind of stuff. And it's really well written. And it's about a player who kind of gets overlooked.
Nice. I'm feeling a Bardi's book club here. You do read an insane amount. Nathan, how about you? Have you read any good football books this year?
So the question's asking about tactics books, and obviously sort of the granddaddy of football tactics books is Jonathan Wilson's Inverting the Pyramid. There are a couple of Michael Cox books out, obviously. There's In the Shadows of Marcelo Bielsa, which I've been meaning to read for a long time. And my friend Lee has a Man City book out as well. But I mean, generally books aren't all that great for tactics stuff. The best stuff is found in articles and blogs in, you know, 500 and 1,000 word bursts.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I don't really read many football books, to be honest. I'll tell you what I did read while I was on holiday. I read James O'Brien's book. Have either of you read that?
Nope.
Oh, it's very good. It's very good. It's very left-wing, and it's ever so slightly sneering, but it's sneering at the right people. Like, it's essentially talking about how the media have... why the media are so awful, and why we shouldn't blame people who fall for their lies. It's very well written, very funny. Yeah, so I'd recommend that, even though it's non-football.
Well, if you want to read a left-wing media criticism book, then check out Noam Chomsky's Manufacturing Consent.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at @DavyShambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.